time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit, and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation, all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to another Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Out Loud. Well, there's a ton of misinformation out there, friends, and it's all intentional to keep the public off kilter and baffled, if you will, right? All this talk about immigration and borders and, this is one of the worst public information campaigns in history. You know, you often hear that America is made up of immigrants, right? How many times you hear that? So what's the problem with taking all these folks in no matter what the circumstances, correct? Well, let me correct that. America is made up of citizens, right? We must ask the question first, and I want everybody to ask today, what is the role that America wants to play in the world? That's a vital question. Nobody's asking it. Let's get the politicians to answer that question honestly. Let's start there. Then we can have a fruitful conversation, people. And what do you think about all this talk about socialism in America? Does socialism have a viable home here in the United States? And really, even bigger than that, why are so many of our citizens embracing these socialist candidates? It's quite baffling. And then there is our beloved fourth estate, the media. That's where we'll start today with the top stories here, friends. Let's start and welcome in our panel here. Brian Gold is here. Brian served in the U.S. Army and U.S. Special Forces for over three decades, works with the Department of Defense, and the CEO of Applied Solutions Consulting. Ava Armstrong is here. She's a political commentator, radio personality, producer here at America Out Loud. She's an author, best-selling author on Amazon. Brooke Says is a conservative activist, patriot, strategic communications analyst, and a weekly columnist here at America Out Loud as well. Dennis Santiago is here as well as a global risk and financial analyst and a weekly columnist here at America Out Loud. Let's have this conversation. I want to start with Jim Acosta, the CNN lawsuit. Judge Timothy Kelly, who was appointed by Trump, and that's been pointed out quite a bit, obviously, by the media, right? So he granted a temporary, and let me use the word temporary there again, a temporary restraining order due to failure of due process to Acosta. He says that, he doesn't have to call on him. Ava, let's start this off here. This decision, a lot of people are saying, is very political, but how can it be when Timothy Kelly, the judge, is the one that ruled on this? Was this the right decision?
Oh, this is rich. It really is. It's a very good decision, and I'll tell you why. Okay. I'm watching the mainstream media trip over themselves about the words due process, which they denied Judge Kavanaugh, by the way. So it's very interesting to see them fight for due process now. So,
you know, it's funny you say that, Ava, because you're right with that. But also, you know, that other story that's in the news, which we won't have time to jump into too much, but that Avenatti, he's also looking for due process, isn't he?
Yes. Everyone should be accorded due process. Don't get me wrong. Jim Acosta and Avenatti, I mean, you know, they're despicable people, but you know what? They deserve due process.
Yeah. Well, that's the way it's supposed to be, but it doesn't always work that way. Let me just rephrase that. In the court of public opinion, the media is used a lot to sway people one way or another, and things get pretty odd. Dennis, let's talk about this Judge Timothy Kelly. I mean, was you surprised? I mean, really, was you surprised that the judge ruled for Acosta and CNN?
No, not at all. It made perfect sense. This was an incident that occurred during a press conference. Everybody reacted. The judge brought it back to basically telling people, look, you got to set the rules down straight, and you know, and then you go forward from that. The back and forth on it, you know, CNN gets a bit of a bump in terms of having gotten their guy back into the room. Whether he ever gets called on is a whole other question. But
that's going to be a watch TV moment when that happens. You know that.
Well, yeah, of course it will. But you know, the bottom line though is there is a need for an understanding of what the decorum should be at a White House press conference, and it's been degrading for quite a while, and this brings it back. You know, they're going to write rules.
Well, that's exactly it.
Rules, you're out.
This is exactly it. The White House is writing new rules up.
I'm sorry. I cannot agree with either of you on this one.
Go ahead, Brian.
We have decided to replace normal social behavior with some weird sense of legal process. There's a normal way that people act when they're in public. It's not judged by a legal standard. It's just a normal way people act. You be respectful. They're invited in as guests to the White House to listen to the president speak. Nice. You show some decorum and some respect, regardless of what your opinion is.
Is that reason enough for the White House to pull his press credentials?
If I walked into the White House right now and told the president he was stupid, I would be thrown out on my rear end faster than you could spit. There's no due process. The only reason there was a due process is because CNN's got a lot of money and a lot of pull.
Well, he didn't That's call it. The president stupid. He just challenged the president. He used the word challenge. Is that? I mean, the that may sound stupid, but
the president asked him to sit down. Everybody knows the normal, unwritten rules.
Right.
You ask a question, you get a follow up. You don't get to stand there and become the Jim Acosta show and run your mouth and hang onto the mic. And the fact that young lady didn't charge charges for him hitting her on the arm like that. This shows that right now the White House is really having some issues with that. And I think honestly, Jim Acosta shouldn't be allowed within 100 meters of the White House.
All right.
That just should be the way it is.
Yeah, all right. Maybe they have a restraining order. Brooke, what do you say about this now from your watch as far as you hear Brian now on Acosta that he's saying that he broke the rules and he has to suffer the consequences of the press credentials being lost? What do you think? Where do you side on this?
On an emotional level, of course, Jim Acosta is a jackass. I'm sorry. I hope I can say that on the air.
You can.
Everybody knows it. It has become the Jim Acosta show, and every other pundit, whether it's April Ryan, they're all looking for sound bites. And under these circumstances, if this is the way the rules are, where they can go in, they can go into the press corps room and they can ask the questions and it be videotaped, he has the right to be there. They all have the right to be there if those are the rules. And under those rules, what Dennis and Ava said are correct insofar as, you know, it was the ruling under the rules, and it was a temporary measure, as you said. It's not finally defined. He's not saying that he has a right to due process. He's saying under the possibility of due process, he hasn't ruled on a final thing.
Right, right.
I think it's going to redound to Trump's benefit, as most things usually do, because the level of abject disrespect shown for the president of the United States, no matter what you think of him, and this showboating is hopefully going to change the entire process by which this thing
is. They all do it, though, really, Brooke. I mean, most of that room is doing the same thing. Acosta's in the lead. I mean, he may be the lead jackass, as you call it, but there are a lot of them in that room, quite frankly.
Correct. Most of them are.
Right. Go ahead,
It's going to end up in the Supreme Court. That's my prediction.
Well, it will only end up there if the president pushes this. I haven't got any inclination that he's going to push this further. I think they kind of backed off, Ava, haven't they?
I'm going to lay a few bucks on this one.
Oh, you think he'll come back? We'll
see. I agree. I don't think he's going to. I think what he's going to do, you know, he doesn't have a right to be called on. So put his ass in the back and don't call
on
him.
That's what
make an idiot about himself.
That's what the judge said, really, Brooke. That's what the judge kind of said.
Yes.
You don't have to call on. I mean, listen, let's be clear. There are a lot of people in that room who never get called on, okay?
Correct. So, hold on.
So the White House is elevating, if they don't like the way the CNN news is, Dennis, let me back to you on this. If they don't like the way the CNN is spinning the news, they don't have to call on them. There's no law that says that they get, you know, that they have to be called for all these questions. There's a lot of people in that room that are never called on, Dennis.
That's correct. And there's and by the same token, you know, it is kind of the job of the press to push the administration.
Well, but is it their job to challenge the administration? Is it their
and
use that? Okay, then he's right. Then all right. Then
journalism is about asking tough questions. All right. And every once in a while, somebody goes a little bit too far,
right.
And then you got to pull them back. But other people there are going to ask tough questions anyway.
Now, this is combative. What the posture that I saw Acosta take in this, I actually tweeted out stuff that I am very concerned for President Trump's security, his physical security.
Correct.
I am.
You know, if I walked into the Malcolm Out Loud or the America Out Loud studio right now and started running my mouth and raising my voice, you'd have me thrown out.
No, we'd give you a mic and tell you to talk louder.
But with respect.
I wish, I wish Brian was holding that mic in that press conference. I'll
tell you. Oh boy, could you see that, Ava?
Hey, my recommendation is you send me and a couple of my friends up there and start running those press briefings. They'd be a lot shorter and a lot more polite.
There you go.
You can 20-year-old.
I have to say. I have to say though that I think that Trump could. I think he handled himself well, but I think that he actually would have won the public opinion mm-hmm. had he stopped at personally insulting Acosta. It made it look, it took it to another level. If he had just let Acosta look like a complete idiot, then that would have been the final towards Trump.
I got to move on, Brooke, but very, very good point. Thanks for saying that, because he tends to get personal that way. That is a problem the president has sometimes, quite a bit, actually. And you're right, he did do that there. It's an interesting conversation here with this Acosta CNN thing, but here's the thing. Let me plant this in your mind. I know a lot of people get outraged that he's disrespectful of the president and all. But again, people, the White House doesn't have to ask the questions to CNN. The president doesn't have to call on Acosta. So let me say this. If they call on CNN again and Acosta, then they're asking for it. And I'm not so sure they're not happy to see these kind of feuds with the media. I think it serves both sides really well. It makes for great radio, let's put it that way. Listen, I want to talk to you guys about this explosive story with Facebook and the New York Times. This is really something else, okay? And let me just inform everybody what's happening here, because you haven't seen an awful lot on this, although the New York Times did an unbelievable piece against Facebook and the establishment. And let me read you this right from the Times here. Sheryl Sandberg, she's the COO of Facebook, friends. Here, let me quote. Sheryl Sandberg was seething. Inside Facebook's California headquarters, top executives gathered in their glass-walled conference room of its founder, Mark Zuckerberg. It was September 2017, more than a year after Facebook engineers discovered suspicious Russia-linked activity on its site, an early warning of the Kremlin campaign to disrupt the 2016 American election. Congressional and federal investigators were closing in on evidence that would implicate the company. But it wasn't the looming disaster at Facebook that angered Ms. Sandberg. It was the social network's security chief, Alex Stamos, who had informed company board members the day before that Facebook had yet to contain the Russian infestation. Mr. Stamos's briefing had prompted a humiliating boardroom interrogation of Ms. Sandberg, Facebook's chief operating officer, and her billionaire boss, Zuckerberg. She appeared to regard the omission as a betrayal, and she says, Sandberg, you threw us under the bus, she yelled at Mr. Stamos, according to people who were there present. Now, that's directly from the New York Times, people, okay? Kind of proves that Facebook executives, Zuckerberg and the company, were aware of this Russian-linked activities on their site that were aimed at disrupting the presidential election. You know, I got to tell you, Brian Gold, let me start right with you on this here. But, you know, all this time we've spent over the last couple of years and millions of dollars of taxpayer money looking at the Trump administration and the infestation of Russians, perhaps Mueller should be investigating Facebook, Zuckerberg, Sandberg and company, you think?
No, I think this is actually, I go a different way with this, Malcolm. This is actually the New York Times being used as a hammer to get all of the social media platforms in line. And that's all
Absolutely.
In preparation for the 2020 election.
I agree.
That's all this is. Because they just did the same thing to Twitter, just not as explosive. They wrote 9 articles on how Twitter did not clean up their act against conservative activism and against conservative voices. And they just finished pounding them like a hammer to a nail. And now they're at their Facebook. Next, they're at the Instagram. And then they'll hit a couple
So, Brian,
others.
You think they're all priming the pump for 2020 and playing games? You think this is all this? Yeah.
This is why the liberals are currently beating the
brilliant.
Conservatives.
Absolutely
on the ballot
brilliant.
Box.
Brilliant strategy.
Because it is brilliant. They're getting all of the conservative voices off the net, allowing the liberals to communicate, allowing them to organize, and keeping the conservative voices to platforms like this or to smaller platforms that are out there where they don't have a bigger voice.
All right,
because the media is not giving their voice.
Who doesn't agree with that on the platform here? Anybody not agree with that point that he makes?
I would go even further to say that Facebook actually colluded with the Democrats.
Absolutely.
That's what I would say. Because they actually met prior to the so-called hearing that they aired on TV. And they actually gave the Chuck Schumer and his gang actually gave Facebook executives tips on how to testify. Slow, pause, determined.
Well, yeah.
You have to have that.
He also went after Warner, who was actually going after Facebook really hard and told him to back off as well.
Well, let's talk about that. Let's jump right into that right now, Brian. That's a good segue because let me read you this again. Brian, picking up what you're saying right there, back to the New York Times. Let me read this to you. In Washington, allies of Facebook, including Senator Chuck Schumer, the Democratic Senate leader, intervened on its behalf, which is what you're saying, Brian. And Ms. Sandberg wooed hostile lawmakers while trying to dispel Facebook's reputation as a bastion of Bay Area liberalism. And I quote, Chuck Schumer, the Democratic Senate leader, intervened on Facebook's behalf and has long worked to advance Silicon Valley's interest. In one incident, Schumer reportedly lobbied Senator Mark Warner, the Democrat out of Virginia, to stop criticizing Facebook and instead focus on tackling right-wing disinformation. Dennis, now let me remind everybody that also Chuck Schumer's daughter works for Facebook, by the way. And also another point is that Facebook, more people in Facebook had invested in Chuck Schumer and a lot of these leading Democrat, these campaigns, the investment dollars coming from Facebook executives is through the wall here. I mean, it's amazing money they're spending over there.
He got the most.
Yeah. Well, that's it. Chuck Schumer. That's exactly it. So what does this all say to you? It's very rich. What is this? Yeah, go ahead.
So I read the entire New York Times article, and I also read the New York Times op-ed that went along with the article.
Okay.
They're actually accusing Facebook of siding with the Republicans. And bringing the Republicans to the point that in the 2018 election, they were able to defeat the blue wave. All right. So now I think what's really going on here is the Democrats are trying to angle to try to get Facebook to support them more going into 2020.
Wow.
This is a game.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
I'm blown away.
And the game,
and the Democrats are winning. And the Democrats are winning because the
exactly.
Republicans have no unity and no strategy. They're absolutely piss poor at managing their social media aspects. They're horrible at it. Their messaging for this midterm was absolutely atrocious. And right now, Facebook and soon Instagram and already Twitter is going to help them launch this for the 2020 election. And we're going to lose it again if we don't watch ourselves.
Oh, I don't think so. I think what's actually going to happen here is that if you read the article in detail, Facebook is struggling to stay as neutral as possible because you know what? They got 2.27 billion users. There's only 240 million users in the United States.
I have to change one word you said, though. You said they're struggling to become. No, they're struggling to appear neutral.
Correct.
Thank you. Thank you.
No, I don't actually think that.
As long as Louis Farrakhan has a Facebook page, they're appearing. They're not doing anything.
These guys are coming out of a period of being very naive and thinking that letting content just drive itself was an okay thing to do. And now what's happening is they're being challenged by everybody because America's gone tribal. And now they want Facebook to go tribal with them.
Well, think
all
about
the parties
this.
Want that to happen. And the bottom line is, if I were Facebook, I would basically be telling all of the tribes, no, it's going to be fair.
I want to move it along to talk about the elections a moment here, please. Yeah, no, I'm not talking about 2020, kids. I'm talking about the 2018 elections, right, that are still going on. I mean, we still don't know who the hell has won some of these races. So let's go around real quickly and give everybody an update. So it looks like in Georgia it looks like we have the winner there. Kemp is obviously claimed the winner, but she's not backing down.
She says she won't concede because that would be agreeing to the system. But she has admitted that she can no longer win. Right. And I'm not really sure what the heck that's supposed to mean. But that, to me, that whole thing was trumped up hard. But the problem with that Georgia race is they put so much money and so much star power in it, she's going to have to eat that.
Yeah.
They put, Oprah went there, Obama went there, Michelle went there. You know, they all went
John
there.
Legend went there. All these celebrities went there. And Brian, that's a great point. You know, I watched her in the press conference, and I think what it is, I think she's embarrassed. Let me say this. If I was running for public office, kids,
big time.
And I had, right, Dennis, if I had the benefit of having all those superstars come to my defense, okay, and they were all there, and then I didn't win the race, Dennis, I'd feel like a schmuck.
Well, bottom line is if you lose the race, it's because you're a loser.
I hate to tell you this, much bigger than that. This is the
it's
new
bigger
normal.
Than that.
This is the new normal. This is how Democrats play the game now. You have to get this down. Any election that elects a Republican is going to be called not fair. It's an illegitimate election. Mm-hmm. There's all kinds of terminology they're using, talking points. But you have to understand, Trump's not their president, okay? Mm-hmm. This Kemp guy in Georgia, he won't be their governor, because Stacey Abrams said that's why, because she said so. This is like kindergarten, okay?
She set in the table for future.
But it's bigger than that, guys. 100%. If you thought that the race baiting was bad, okay, two cases, Gillum and Abrams, both black, both Democrat. The reverse would not be the same. Nobody would care in the media if it was a Republican running. They did not even talk 5 seconds about John James running as the senator for Michigan. Okay, it's all Democrat politics. It's race politics. And if you thought the race baiting was bad under Obama,
that's exactly right.
These next 2 years are going to make that look like child's play. These two races are all being couched in racism. If you didn't vote for her, you're racist. If you didn't vote for Gillum, you're racist.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
It's all race. Watch for it.
No, that's exactly right. Now, listen, I reported on this in the past.
I'm Filipino, and suddenly I'm a white guy.
Yeah, okay. Well, tremendous thank you here to Brian Gold, Ava Armstrong, Brooke Says, Dennis Santiago. Coming up next, we're going to have an interesting conversation, the benefits of an open border. We're going to do some reverse psychology and talk about this immigration, but do it from a different standpoint. Got some interesting people coming up. And then also, we're going to have an incredible conversation about socialism, the United States Socialist Republic. Very interesting program with two go-getters at the end of this program. You're going to want to hear that as well. Let me again take just a moment to thank everybody. And again, this time of the year, Thanksgiving, it's time I want to appreciate and give thanks to all of you out there. And I encourage everybody to do that. Step back and give thanks in your life or where you're at. Count your blessings. We do that every day here at America Out Loud, mostly because of our experts. They're amazing authors, speakers, commentators. They're brilliant people around the globe, friends. In fact, we have an amazing bookstore back at America Out Loud where you can get a lot of these cats are best-selling authors and amazing people. You'll see the links right at AmericaOutLoud.com. Friends, big program, big conversation coming up next. Stay right there as Viewpoint rolls on here.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutLoud.com, where the conversation never ends, with 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
What is the role that America wants to and should play in the world? That's a vital question. And if we're going to have a fruitful conversation on immigration in this nation, let's answer that question first, people. If we want to become another third world country, we're on track for that right now. If we want to change the trajectory, we better get started with some real truth here. Joining us in this conversation here, Dr. Steven Steinleit is here. He's the senior policy analyst at the Center for Immigration Studies in Washington, D.C. He's one of the nation's leading authorities on immigration trends, policy, and politics behind it all. A lot of politics behind it, people. Linda Martinelli is here. She's an entrepreneur, owner, and president of Proformer Graphic Print Source. She's an entrepreneur, a weekly columnist, host of Talkin' While Married, an amazing show at 8 p.m. on America Out Loud. Her recent column, 51,000 illegals poured over our southern border in October alone. It's worth the read, friends. It's at the top of America Out Loud right now. Jim McKay is also here rounding out our panel. He's a political analyst, commentator, and radio producer right here at America Out Loud, friends. Okay, open borders. All right, what I want to ask you to do, Jim, I'm going to put you right to the test and ask you, why should we have open borders? Give me a handful of quick reasons why America should have open borders.
Okay, open borders. Well, the borders really don't prevent people from migrating. They simply make their journeys harder and also put them in the hands of the smugglers or the coyotes, as we call them.
Who make a lot of money, by the way.
Yeah, they do. Borders produce violence, but don't stop immigration either. You could see what went on in Mexico a couple weeks ago. Blaming migrants for lower wages just divides workers and creates what they call a race to the bottom, getting more and more people at the bottom end of that income scale.
What kind of an America do we want? You know, Dr. Steinlake, nobody's answering that darn question. Would you answer it, please?
Well, for starters, I want to tell Jim to get back on his meds. Don't drink before the broadcast. It's always a bad thing to do. Number one, obviously, we want to be a nation of laws. That's how things have worked here. That's how we've taken an incredibly diverse group of people and created a society which right now is going through a tough patch, and it's gone through tough patches before. But in spite of that diversity, we've retained a remarkable degree of social cohesion. Again, it's being challenged. It's always challenged, but we've come through. What it concerns me now is that the size of this immigration and its lack of diversity is going to create very particular problems. And if we permit this kind of immigration to continue, you know, as the figure out there about 50,000 crossing, or we know now from the study that was done and just came out of Yale University that crazy number we've been told for, I don't know, what, 15 years, that the number is, of illegals is 12 million. Right. Well, in fact, they're now estimating 20 to 30 million. Essentially, what we're saying is if we have an open borders, an open society, it's not really even globalism. It's kind of global anarchy. And what we're going to do is, as Malcolm was saying, we're going to become a third world country. And because the immigrants tend to be not like in the old days during the great wave of immigration, they were very diverse. Now the great majority are, well, for a long time from Mexico, so that Mexico, just the number from Mexico is eight times as much as the next sending nation. Now the great numbers are coming from Central America. We're essentially introducing a sort of a rather unitary culture, which is not the culture that most Americans have adapted to. Mm-hmm. You know, we all came from different places, and we all sort of, what America did is it gave us all the right to become WASPs, I guess. Well, this is not going to happen. We're going to end up with a society without cohesion.
Yeah, they're not assimilating at all.
Society. No, they're not. And even under good, you know, under good circumstances, even right. In the old days, it took about two generations for most people to do it. Now there's almost no need to assimilate when you can spend your whole life essentially within an ethnic enclave.
Yeah, and that's happening. I mean, it's happening on the border all the way across, Stephen, left and right. I mean, but economically, Stephen, the question about the third world country is the biggest problem. And it's not just a talking point. There are a lot of people in our country right now who are homeless. There are a lot of people sleeping on floors and benches and in horrible conditions right here in America. I mean, these problems don't exist just in third world countries. They exist right here in America. We can't even fix the problems we got. Homelessness is an epidemic that has grown. It's the biggest problem we're going to have in the future. And it's in all of our rich urban cities. It's everywhere. And yet, we are being asked to solve all the world's homelessness problems. And it's bad. Where's the Vatican on this, Linda? Where's the Pope? Where's the head of some of the religious organizations? Why don't they take some of these people in? I mean, is it America's? Is it our obligation to be the world's keeper? Is my question. Back to the question I asked, Linda. What do we want America to look like?
As far as the people that assimilated way back when we had everybody coming in as immigrants to America, they did assimilate, and their goal was to assimilate and to be Americans. That's no longer the goal. And we do have all of these enclaves of different ethnicities. And, you know, as my husband and I drive around the country, from time to time, we'll go to an area where it's just predominantly Muslim and they don't assimilate at all. We will go to an area that's predominantly Hispanic and they have all of their culture there. It's not like it used to be where people are assimilating. But to the point, I mean, there are so many people coming over the border, and the news keeps reporting that we have, you know, this caravan of 4,000. Well, forget the 4,000, 51,000 in a month. It's over a half a million just this year alone.
That's
and you
incredible.
Extrapolate, it's incredible, but we don't hear it. And I think if the American people were really aware of the scale of this problem, they would be more up in arms about it. But what we have is we have a media and a
it's what I said.
Political society that wants these people here to get the votes,
well,
and they aren't thinking
about
the
long-term
consequences.
Linda, you think it's all about the votes? I mean, back to long-term consequences.
I think a lot of
right?
it is about the votes, Malcolm. Mm-hmm. I absolutely do.
You know, there was a fascinating study, which I think was something many of us felt very good about, done by the Harvard Center for the Study of American Political Life, along with the Harris people. What they discovered was that 76% of the American people want immigration slashed in half. But here's the kicker, and this gets to the issue of numbers. What they said is, we want to cut in half. That is to say, we want no more than 500,000. Well, that shows how far they're off. We know that we take in 1.2 million legally, and some 600,000 come in illegally. By 900,000. In other words, even Americans who don't like the present situation and want to cut down mm-hmm. are so uninformed that they don't even know sort of what number they're
looking
for.
Well, that's it. That's exactly it. Jim, President Trump comes out. He says this. He says he welcomes legal immigration. I would ask everybody on the panel here, does anybody not welcome legal immigration? So the president comes out and says he welcomes it, right?
But, I don't welcome it at the level we have.
Right. Well, back to your point now, Stephen. He says, and I think you'll agree with this, but he wants it on a merit-based system. But he's called racist for that. He's called racist. And that's again, Jim, that's the go-to card they use consistently, is when you don't agree with their policies, you're racist, right?
Absolutely. It's the way of slamming the door on the conversation. And as Stephen pointed out, there's two immigrations going on. One, the illegal from Central America, these people that 60% of them don't have a high school education. Very few have any education beyond high school. And then we have the visa overstay immigrations, the million plus college students that are in the United States that don't leave. And that is augmented by about 700,000 visa overstays a year. And that's out of that same Yale MIT research mm-hmm. study that was done several months ago. So and those people, they blend into our society because they're typically college educated, they're well-to-do, they finance their own trip here, and their plan is to get a high-tech job in the United States. And one of the reasons I don't think we go after them is the high-tech companies are big donors to the Congress and the president's elections.
Right. On top of which, we have no entry and or exit system.
We don't track them at all.
We don't do any tracking. Right?
Well, they just disappear into the fabric of America, and then we don't have a way to get them out. And Malcolm, to your point about the homeless people and the problem that we have in the country, a lot of that is exacerbated by all of these people coming in, because a lot of the people that are on the streets are these people that can't find jobs. Mm-hmm. And if you just look in California, where, say, in Los Angeles, the homeless has increased 38% in the last year. And when you look at the billions of dollars that California is spending of the taxpayers' money on giving money to the illegal immigrants as far as health care and schooling and food stamps and all those things, this is not fair to Americans. And we need to have some way to stem this tide. In Hungary, they had this problem with a lot of immigrants coming through, and they built a wall. And the wall is a substantial wall.
Walls work.
Well, let's talk about that wall a moment here.
The wall works.
Well, let's talk about that a moment. There's talk right now that the GOP is trying to get the funding through in this particular campaign before it turns over to the Democrats at the beginning of January. I got to ask you straight off. I know you follow this thing as religion, Dr. Steinlight. You tell me, is there any chance at all? I mean, we're hearing all kinds of numbers that he'll get that wall funded before the end of the year.
No, there's none. And the fact is that McCarthy and McConnell are big immigration people. The GOP establishment, as opposed to, you know, those poor guys in the Freedom Caucus, mm-hmm. The GOP establishment is completely comfortable with massive and illegal immigration, just doesn't like to put that out publicly. There's not a chance. And they were talking about, as it was, minimal amounts of money, like, you know, $1.5 billion or something like this. I mean, it's farcical. It's farcical. I mean, when they try to talk about the wall in terms of being an economic loss,
right.
Well, we all know that the money is to go to illegal immigrants, by the way, who do get money. They get food stamps for their kids and education. Costs way more in a single year than a wall would cost.
Now, what if the president decides to shut the government down? What if he doesn't sign off on this next appropriations? What happens if that happens?
There's going to be hell to pay is what's going to happen.
What's the hell to pay, Jim? What do you think that's going to be?
It's going to be a repercussion all through the next 2 years into the 2020 election. A lot of people are saying that the reason that people did not come out and vote Republican in the midterms
right.
is the fulfillment of two basic promises wasn't taken care of. The health care, which the Democrats beat over our mm-hmm. heads with.
Right, right.
And the other one was immigration.
Well,
neither of those were solved.
The Democrats knew it. You're exactly right, Jim. That's an interesting what you say there, and I would tend to agree with that. But here's the thing. You know, Ronald Reagan was very good at shutting down the government if he didn't get some of those big things. So what happens if he just won't budge? I mean, wouldn't that be one way to get that? They would have to budge at some point. I mean, if he doesn't say uncle, Stephen, don't you think?
Well, I think one difference is that Reagan was popular. And, you know, sad to say, this president is personally very unpopular. One reason that the big inroads were made in the House, and let's admit it, they were big inroads, is because of his personal unpopularity. There are a lot of people, by the way, who don't have a problem with his policies. I mean,
exactly.
The economy is
exactly.
booming
yeah.
and on and on and on. They really don't like the man. And this is a problem. You know, let the Democrats shut the government down. Think what it did to Schumer the last time.
Well, but the Republicans took him off the hook, Stephen. The Republicans let him go easy with Schumer.
I don't think government shut down. I think it's just it's like invading Russia. It's just one of those things you shouldn't do.
Really? Really?
Yeah. See, I don't care if they shut the government down. We need to get this done. And Senator Inhofe has a bill in front of the Congress right now, called the Wall Act, that would fund the $25 billion border wall mm-hmm. by closing the existing loopholes that allow the illegal immigrants to get funding from the federal government. And I think that that's a great plan. And I don't see how people can really argue against it. They will. But this, if you just take the money that we are paying out in federal benefits to illegals in this
sure.
country, that more than funds the wall. So why can't we just do that? That is exactly, Mexico's paying for the wall. And it's not just Mexico, but it's Honduras and Nicaragua.
So you're saying, Linda, that he should hold steady, the president shouldn't buckle this time. Is that right?
He was elected to do this.
Exactly.
I don't think he should buckle at all. And I think that this is his last chance, and we need to do this.
And Stephen, you say no way.
Obviously, to play the game in Washington, you've got to offer something. And, you know,
but he offered amnesty to those people.
I think that was a terrible deal. The president was saying, oh, I'll trade a wall for DACA.
Right.
Well, I mean, it's way too little. It's a lousy deal. If you want to, you know, trade and get into a serious negotiation. And the day is going to have to come, by the way, where we're going to look at the 20 to 25 million people. Mm-hmm. And let's be realistic, they ain't going to get deported. And if we're going to end up in a situation where we're going to have to cut a deal like that, then we're going to need a lot more than a wall. We're going to need mandatory E-Verify, end-to-chain immigration, radical number in the reduction of legal immigrants, end-to-birthright citizenship, end the visa lottery. merit-based immigration. I mean, we're going to need all of that.
Yeah, but there's no way to get. I mean, the problem is, Stephen, we can't even get them to decide on one simple thing. And the next problem is when you're exactly right with what you're saying. But when we complicate the whole immigration movement, it becomes almost impossible to deal with, Stephen. Don't you think?
Yeah. But they don't want. I mean, the point is, it was I believe made by both of the folks on the call. And that is that the Democrats don't want a wall because the wall cuts off their dream of becoming the permanent political majority.
You've said some really good things. All right, let me give you the last word on something here now. Dr. Stanley says something, a couple of things very, very interesting here. And one of the things is that my ears went up is that the Republicans are really, they don't really want the wall either. They want immigration. And he kind of called out, he did call out McConnell, and he called out McCarthy there as well. You take a look at, again, George McClellan, who's coming up next in our next discussion here. He's got a column up top there, Jim. Are Republicans really the losers they appear to be? Probably. Very striking column he's got there. But speak to that a moment, Jim McKay, and that it's not just the Democrats, but the Republicans have been part of this problem.
Well, I think if you look at the Freedom Caucus and if you look at the last election, the candidates that were backed and backed Trump in the Republican Party won. They won in their states. They won in the Senate. Mm-hmm. The ones that didn't fell by the wayside. So I think there's going to be an opening or a turning of minds for more of the holdover establishment members of the Senate and the House. 42 or 43 Republican members of the House retired, and they're gone. So you have some new blood in there again.
Well, he's draining the swamp for Democrats and rhinos. I mean, they're like
draining the swamp.
You're right, Jim. They're like cockroaches. He turned on the lights and they ran like hell.
And I think the president has an opportunity right now with these caravans at the southern border,
right,
with the unrest that's going on in Tijuana, which is only going to get worse as more of these people show up.
Yeah, the mayor in Tijuana called out and wanted help from Mexico. He said, let's go, people, help me here, right? He's dying.
The Mexican people don't want them there either.
No. But you're saying, Stephen, that's not going to work and we're not going to get anything done on this in the next couple of years, huh? Bottom line?
I think we have no choice but to hold off and wait, because I don't believe there will be no initiative coming out of the House on immigration that any of us could support.
Okay. All right. Listen, I think I started this conversation by saying the benefits of an open border. I'm going to end this conversation and say to you people, there probably are not any, but I think it's something you're going to have to live with if you listen to the discussion here. In our last couple of thoughts here, big thank you here to Dr. Stephen Steinleit, Linda Martinelli, Jim McKay. Again, this is one of the biggest problems our country is facing, and yet, friends, our politicians are not willing to solve it. Please get after your politicians in Washington. I plead with you as a Republican, as a Democrat, as an independent, to get after the politicians and please get them to do something about this problem. My friends, we're going to pay a high price if we don't get on this thing. I promise you for that. Well, listen, this show, Viewpoint, it continues here. We've got a big conversation coming up next about socialism in America. I know you thought we'd never say this, but what do you think about the United States Socialist Republic? How does that sound? The USSR, right here at home. Wow. Big conversation up next,
I'm
friends.
I'm going to New Zealand.
As Viewpoint rolls on here.
We are the vision of the voices. You can email us at talk@americaoutloud.com.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
We're going to have a conversation next about something that might make you a little uncomfortable. That's right, because it's called, you remember the days of the USSR? You remember that, the Soviet Union, the big evil empire, back to Ronald Reagan and Margaret Thatcher. You remember those days, Mikhail Gorbachev, yeah? Well, what would you think about a new USSR? The United States Socialist Republic. How does that come off to you? Do you cringe when you hear that a little bit? Well, we have an interesting op-ed at the top of America Out Loud. I want to encourage you to go take a look and read. It's an eye-opener, really. And let's get to our panel here and bring on here two gentlemen that are big voices here on America Out Loud. And first time they've ever spoken together in this discussion, so looking forward to this. IQ Al Razzouli joins us from across the pond there in Europe. He's the author of Lifting the Veil. He's an Iraqi-born Arabic speaker, and certainly you know by now he's considered one of the foremost authorities in the world on the subjects of Islam. And again, his write-ins are magnificent. You'll see all of his write-ins back at America Out Loud. He's a weekly columnist there. So, also magnificent by far here, George McClellan. He's a historian and a political analyst. His professional career spans 43 years in law enforcement and the U.S. Naval Investigative Service. He, again, is an avid writer and columnist here for America Out Loud. We appreciate both of these men and respect them greatly. Want to have this conversation about socialism. Gentlemen, I got to tell you, I never thought we'd be having a real conversation. I mean, an actual conversation. I mean, I knew growing up as a boy there was this kind of in the closet, this communist movement or socialist movement in the country. But it was sort of like, we never really took it for real. You know, we knew there was an American communist group of some sort, but it's like it was so far removed from reality. But today now, in the public space, you've got people running on the socialism agenda. And they're winning elections, which is mind-blowing. And there were others that came close to winning elections. I never thought I'd see this. IQ, let's start this off. You have this really unbelievable read, this column, the United States Socialist Republic. And, you know, you say here, unless we the people make enormous rational changes politically, socially, educationally, and religiously, then we'll become America just another banana republic. Let me give you the floor there and tell us exactly what you mean by that.
Well, I mean it exactly the way it is. I was shocked at the results of the latest elections. I mean, to have literally people who are saying they are communists and people who are Muslim, why would anybody, any rational human being, elect a Muslim? The fact that this woman, there are two women, one in Minnesota, one in New York, elected for Congress. They are not going to swear on the Bible, ladies and gentlemen. They are going to swear on the Quran. And what does the Quran teach them? Sharia. And what is Sharia? The nemesis of the American Constitution. And the instant they swear on the Quran, they are automatically the eternal and mortal enemies of every human being on the planet who is not a Muslim. This is not a negotiable item. I don't exaggerate. This is a fact. Yeah. You have Linda Sassoor.
It's a fact that a lot of people are in denial for, though, IQ. A lot of people don't really see it that way. And again, this is an argument that you put forth on a regular weekly basis as an expert in this particular area. But again, it's a matter of turning minds to understand the difference of these two. George, you hear the opening remarks here from IQ in speaking of these two winners. He's speaking specifically of these two Muslim winners in Minnesota and New York about swearing on the Quran versus the Bible again. But you see others. You see the Adams there, the potential governor in your state in Georgia who almost won that race in Georgia. And then you had Gillum in Florida who almost won. What's going on, George?
Well, they almost won, but those people did not declare as followers of Muhammad. They're just...
No, but they're socialist.
They're just socialists. That's exactly right. What's going on is, as IQ says in his saying, children are growing up with single parents, and there's no father figure or no education in the schools to teach them American history. It's being denied, it's being changed, it's being altered. So we have a bunch of people out here who don't really know what's happening. When you watch television and watch these on-the-street interviews, and they ask college students, to answer certain questions they don't even know the answers to, but yet they will profess to be socialists because it sounds good that they that the government should be feeding people. People shouldn't be out on the street living in paper cardboard houses, that sort of thing. I mean, homeless. I got that. But we're denying our country the truth, and we are allowing the socialists to do it, or worse, the fascists.
We just had a talk just before this, guys. The segment just before this was about, we had experts on immigration on, and we were talking about America becoming a third world country, that potentially, if we don't get this immigration conversation down straight, pretty quick here, we're going to become a third world country. IQ, this is something I know you're passionate about as well. There's a lot of resistance to putting any wall up or anything else on the southern border. They're coming over by the thousands. In fact, we have another op-ed right at the top of America Out Loud right this moment that's entitled 51,000 Illegals Poured Over Our Southern Border in October Alone, from Linda Martinelli. And there's some pretty startling facts in there about what's going on. You know, they talk about a caravan with a few thousand people. That's only the tip of an iceberg. And there's a lot of talk about who's in this immigration chain. But you see, again, one of the questions nobody wants to answer is, what's the goal of America, IQ? A lot of people think the goal of America is that it should take in anybody and everybody, sort of what happened in Europe with Merkel and Theresa May and what's going on, and why the UK's got this whole Brexit thing with the population and the influx of immigrants there in Europe. Same problems happening there, isn't it, IQ?
Of course it is. My question to any American, we've got two brain cells of logic. Would China allow its border to be invaded? The answer is no. Would Russia do it? No. Would any other country on earth do it? The answer is no. Why is America? Yes, America is the land of immigrants. True, but they all came, if I remember, through Ellis Island. They came legally. These people are illegal. The word is illegal.
See, nobody's getting that. Nobody's getting that, IQ. And you know something else? The people who came here, see, there's a lot of bad information, misinformation, IQ, out in the public space, because the media is complicit in all of this. But the thing is, this whole thing about America, you know, we have the sob story, IQ, about, well, we're a country of immigrants. Why shouldn't we accept anybody that comes in? But, you know, I beg to differ with people, because America is a country of citizens, IQ, citizens, not immigrants or illegal immigrants. It's a country of citizens. That's the problem. They don't want to replace that word of immigrants or illegal immigrants with citizens. Back to Ellis Island and what you say, that's the problem.
But what I can't understand is nothing to do with linguistics. It's to do with reality. Why do we have homes with windows and doors and gates? The answer is simple. We don't want somebody to come in who's not invited. If somebody is breaking into my home, I'll blow their brains up. It's simple. It's not complicated. But all of a sudden, you have a generation. You are talking about the media. The media is not complicit only. It is the enemy of the people. They're criminal. They distort everything. They literally contort reality and facts. But reality and facts, just because they contorted it, it doesn't mean that George and I and you should not face facts and reality. Mm-hmm. The people who are invading America today, those who are coming to the border, should be given a choice. You cross the border, you're dead. Otherwise, you stay on the other side. They're not immigrants. Immigrants, if they move from country A to the neighboring country B, they stay in the country B. But if they are allowed to go through B, C, and D, and E, that's not immigrants anymore. That's an invasion. Mm. Correct me.
Interesting. Yeah, that's an interesting way to put it, George. I guess the way IQ puts it out there, it kind of, because the president was ridiculed about using the word invasion, as well as some other top administration officials. They were ridiculed for that, for using the word invasion versus just a caravan, George. You see that?
Well, that was Jim Acosta. Nobody believes him anymore. He's picked the arse. You know, Trump still believes that it's an invasion.
Yeah. He's still a buffoon, right?
What bothers me the most about this whole thing is the Democrats recently winning the House, right, but they still haven't presented a plan to govern that's good for America, except to rescind Trump's tax cuts, reduce military spending, reimpose green regulations, stop funding the wall, use that money for the wall to open welcome centers for the invaders, shut down ICE, and continue to fund Mueller's witch hunt against Donald Trump. And that's where we're going right now. And the invasion is a big part of that.
That is well said. Because he's so polarizing that he comes across as a bully, and he's marked as a racist, George. I mean, what about that?
Well, he is well-liked. Who are you asking? Who's making the statement that he's not well-liked? I don't know anybody in my community.
Well, yeah. In the company here of George IQ and Malcolm, we may like what we see. IQ, what do you think? Are you happy with things?
Listen to me. I've always said it from the very beginning when he put his name into the pot. He is the savior of America. Savior, literally, from the religious point of view. Had Hillary won, today America would have been finished even after 20 months. And now that you have the idiots in the House, Donald Trump will have to go executive order after executive order. He should emulate Obama. Executive order. That's it. Finish them off.
What do you think of that, George?
He's absolutely correct. I absolutely agree with him.
See, what you're saying is it's okay if the shoe is on the other foot, because Obama got a lot of hell for that by governing by executive order, but the Republicans wouldn't play with him. Why is it when the shoe's on the other foot, it's more acceptable? Isn't that true?
Well, yes. It is. Because what Trump is doing is undoing what Obama did. But where we're short right now is that we have nobody who will make laws that will that Trump will sign, making his executive orders the law instead of just something that the next guy will do.
Well, no, the House has already come out and said, and Pelosi as Speaker and the rest of the cats coming in there, they've already said that they're going after all these new chair people of the committees they're putting together now, that they're going to go after Trump. That's where they're going to spend their time. So there's
we still have a Senate, and Trump has a veto pen.
Right, but it's all a circus. All this is very self-defeating. You know, IQ, how does this look to the world? I'm very serious here. You know, over in Europe, when people look at politics playing over here, and nobody follows it as closely as you do, not many do here. I'm talking about politics in America as well. But how do people in Europe look at that right now? And what's the perception over there?
It depends. If you are part and parcel of the socialist movement in Europe, they look at it exactly like the Democrats. But if you are the patriots of Europe, they love Trump. All the movements in Western Europe today, that they want borders, they want to stop immigration, especially of Muslims, emulating Donald Trump. That's a fact, not fiction. Yeah. The news media in Europe is as criminal and complicit as the news media in America.
What do you see happening right now? And by the way, in Europe right now, there's a lot of trouble out there right now. Theresa May's in trouble. Merkel's in trouble. Europe's got a lot of problems, man. I don't know what's going to give out there. What do you see over the next 2 years in world politics? Last word.
Within 3 to 5 years, the European Union would be gone. I'm preparing an article for you. It's called The Axis of Evil. Democrats, Muslims, Antifa.
Wow.
What do you see?
Wow. Boy, you are something else, man. Boy, you certainly hit the nail right on the head there. Explosive conversations, for sure. Again, I am honored to have both IQ Al Razuli and George McClellan with us. Really two patriots. Two amazing patriots, my friends. Friends, we appreciate you being here and being part of the journey here with us. You can email us at talk@americaoutloud.com. As you know, we will always deliver an honest analysis and opinions on all sides of the political aisle. We don't discriminate against an opinion. The main thing is we are always in search of the out loud truth.